Okay, we are live, and ladies and gentlemen, I would like to welcome you back to Podnuts Pro, where we have brought back, for your entertainment, the one, the only, the incomparable, immeasurable, Matthew Rainey. And joining myself is Martin Obando from almost the Great White North. And I am Marvin B, coming from you from the great southern state of Florida. Gentlemen, how are you guys doing this evening?
Well, I am operating within established parameters. Thank you.
All right, Data.
Wait, how did you get a great state and I just got the North?
I got nothing. Of course, I'm just in Louisiana.
You were a little hard to find, though. That's why you had that big intro, because we had to find you, track you down.
Yeah, you got all of the adjectives, the adulations.
Immeasurable.
See, in Obando, you got actually a territory. You got the whole North.
Oh, well, okay then.
I was going to say Northwest, but, you know, some people get upset. I didn't want to offend the state of Washington, so.
I thought that's mine, too, because if I have the whole North, that's mine.
Right.
So.
I have to share the South with Marvin.
It's big enough.
Yeah, it is. It is. So, gentlemen, we are back with episode 81 of Podnuts Pro. No, the show did not pod fade. It just took a little break and needed a little rejuvenational tweak, and we are back. And sounds pretty good to say Podnuts Pro with Matt Rainey and Martin Obando.
It does. It's been a while. And I have to say, for years, I think the last show was probably a week, maybe 2 years, a month and 2 weeks, something like that. Make that 3 years. But I know of all the people I've talked to, I went to Chicago for CompTIA. I went to Phoenix for CompTIA. I met a lot of great people, and I was surprised at how many people came up to me and were talking to me and telling me, when's Podnuts Pro coming back? Why'd you stop doing Podnuts Pro? We want it back. I was really surprised at how many people told me that.
It was one of the first Podnuts shows that I listened to. And at first it was a little, I had a hard time with it. And then as soon as it's like the fourth one, I got hooked. And then I was there listening all the time. And so it was, you know, it's a very nostalgic feeling for me of that original Podnuts, you know, the Podnuts shows that I was listening to was actually you and Lalo.
Yeah, I like doing them. Just really got overworked. And I, to be honest with you, I was getting really burnt out with both work. And of course, if you're getting burnt out at work, I didn't really even feel like talking about computers anymore. I didn't want to come home and talk about it. I didn't even listen to podcasts for probably over a year. I just stopped. When I was off at work, I was off at work. I didn't really consider a career change, but I was really burnt out at work. I was just so sick of computers for a while. But been over that for a while, still working, still going strong, keeping busy.
Well, I will also say that Podnuts Pro was one of the first podcasts that I started listening to when I started looking for podcasts and trying to find somebody who was doing what I was doing and not just, you know, computer repair tips and, you know, how to help your grandmother, you know, navigate AOL and stuff like that. It was a podcast that was about, you know, doing tech for businesses, and that's what I was looking for. So a lot of the other shows are doing this now, but I think it's just a nice flair to have a group of guys that we're all able to tell stories and share experiences that are similar to each other, that we can ask each other questions when we need a little bit of help, and share some great stories.
Yeah, it might be interesting to see how, if things are done differently in different parts of the country. Way up there in the Northwest, down here in the Southeast.
It is. Do you guys put your plugs in upside down? That's, we have to do that up here. They won't work without that. The ground is on the top.
So I see that a lot down here. I don't have any like that, but I do see that a lot. And I let them know that their plugs are upside down.
See, we just flow with it up here. We're pretty easy.
I say you might want to call an electrician because all these are upside down.
You should try that sometime. Call an electrician out and say, these are all upside down.
Hey, fins up, tails down, surf's up. That's all we know down here.
We don't have surfing up here. Well, you do. But it's cold, very cold.
And it's usually raining over there, too, from what I can see.
It's been nice. Last couple of days has been really nice. It was 90 on Monday. It was 68 on Sunday and raining and 90 on Monday.
Hey, so I want to give one shout out. I thought it was pretty funny. I heard Geeksters came out last episode, Martin, and I want to give a shout out to Mitch. When you announced that Podnuts Pro is coming back, you asked Mitch, you remember Matt Rainey, right? And he said, yeah. I said, wait, is this more than one question? Because I want to charge you. That was pretty funny.
You know, that is still the ongoing joke that I talk to in the Podnuts community. That's still the, I even think about that to this day. When people email me and I think, you know, what would Matt do? I'm like, is this billable? Is it not? Has it reached the 15 minutes? Is it a yes or no question? I don't know. And I'm always thinking about how you handle your customers.
When in doubt, bill. No. Not all the time, but yes, that I think I hear that all the time on the podcast. Is it, if that's one thing that people take away from the first 80 episodes is to don't give away your time. And Bill, I'm happy with that.
Yep.
And Marvin, I heard you make a reference of probably a few months back on the Daily Show, on the call-in show, which I think I've heard a few times as well, but heard you mention it. I'm glad that that caught on too, was the order of response. One is service agreement, a customer with a mission down outage, mission critical outage. Two, non-service agreement customer, mission critical. Three, service agreement customer, non-mission critical. Four, non-service agreement, non-mission critical.
Absolutely, yeah.
Because I don't, what drives me crazy is I'll hear some people say, and it's just different opinions. I mean, I'm not saying one's right, one's wrong. For me, I'm not going to drop a company that's not a service agreement customer. If they have crypto locker and they're not service agreement, I'm not going to drop them to go take care of a service agreement customer that can't print to one of their printers. But if that takeaway, it's two takeaways that I'm glad people have caught on to.
I think it's just something where you learn to prioritize what's important in your business. And those are two critical things is, you know, make sure you bill for your time and make sure you take care of the right customer at the right time. That's pretty much the way I looked at it because, yeah, if you're going to let a non-service agreement customer with a non-emergency eat away at your time, you're going to lose the really good customers that, you know, there's a reason that they went on a service agreement with you, you know, that they want to get that priority service. And if they've got emergencies that you're asking them to wait because you've got somebody else, oh, well, yeah, this doctor's at home and he can't, you know, print, you know, that customer's, you know, if it's a business and they can't bill, which is what a lot of my law offices are, that they don't like that. You know, that's affecting their bottom line. So those are two big principles that that a lot of techs have to learn in business to grab a hold of early.
Yeah.
So I want to, just in case somebody who hasn't listened to Podnuts Pro, maybe I should give my background and what I do. Y'all have both been on shows a lot recently. So basically what I do, and I'm a little bit different than you, Marvin and Martin. I'm a partner at a company. There's three partners. I have four other full-time techs and two full-time office staff. So we're pretty well staffed. My job is the service manager partner. So every call that comes in, I'm making sure that it's assigned to a tech and that it's getting done on a timely basis. making sure it's done right. If the techs have questions or need help on something, they come to me. So I'm basically in charge of the day-to-day, all the service calls, all the work being done is what I'm in charge of. What that means is I'm behind my desk most of the day. I gave up going on the road, which is fun to go out on the road, and the day goes by faster when you're traveling around the road. But I'm behind a desk on calls, on remote sessions all day long, and helping my techs and guiding my techs. So that's what I do.
So do you work at all one-on-one with customers, or you just work one-on-one with your techs, and they, if they have questions, they kind of, you're like the tier two support, I guess.
No, I work with techs, with customers, because a lot of customers only want to talk to me, right? And generally, I try then steer them away from that, but I try and stay billable as much as possible as well. So I'm on the phone with customers pretty much all day, remote sessions, and helping them out as well. And I'm doing bench work on the side because I have my own little bench. So I have my computers running stuff. I have remote sessions and on phone. So it's pretty busy, and I have to make sure that I keep my techs busy as well by giving them work orders that they can do. I try to keep them on the road. I have one that I keep in the office to do bench work and help with the calls. I try and keep that one on the road, and I'm in the office as well.
All right. So, Obando, your business has also changed in the last year. Do you want to kind of tell everybody about that?
Yeah. So for the last 4 years, I was a single person. And now in January of this year, I hired an employee. And that has been tough for me, not because I have an employee, not because of the business side, not because of the finances side. It's because I have a hard time letting go. And so I'm learning to let go. But yes, that's been the new thing for me, is actually working on letting go and letting my customer, or letting my employee, just talk to customers. And even today, I said, hey, take this job. And he did it. It was fine. Everything worked out fine. So I don't know why I was scared to let go. But, you know, I think that's just part of owning a business, and part of you know, having my name. You know, it just comes down to reputation. I'm afraid, you know, I want to make sure that my clients have a good reputation with me, and my name is on the business. And I think that's for everybody. But Marvin, we have the, you know, our name is on the system, our name is on our shirts, and you want to make sure that people are happy with you. And not that I don't want to count Matt out, but when you work for a bigger organization, you kind of, I don't know, maybe there's a little bit of disconnect there. I don't know, because I mean, I know when I worked for a bigger organization, if something happened, I mean, it would eventually trickle down, but ultimately somebody up at the top was more responsible than I was for it. So that's kind of the struggles that I go through with having an employee and working on just releasing that and letting him go more.
Now, I'm sure you have the clients who only want to talk to you.
Yes,
and that's who they've been dealing with forever,
right? And so it's a work in progress of trying to get people to stop calling me and actually open up a ticket, because if I can't get to the phone, but yet my employee monitors the tickets as well, then he can get on the ticket and he can serve them faster.
Yeah, and the way we wean the customers off of that is to ensure them he's working under my direct supervision. I've given him instructions on what to do. If he has any questions, he has my direct number. I'm going to pick up and talk to him and help him through it. And that generally puts the customer at ease. And what's even puts them more at ease is if the tech runs into a problem, what the best way I think to handle that is you don't jump in and fix it. You let your tech fix it or help him fix it. So the customer builds confidence in him that he can fix it. You don't want to just take over and do it. You want to guide him to do it. It gives him some training and experience, and it builds confidence with the customer. Because too often I'll see they just jump in and do it. And the client sees that, and the client says, well, I don't want him. I just want the person who can do everything.
Right.
One of the things that I found that worked is if the customer doesn't see you and they don't know who gets it done, just tell them it was the tech, even if it was you. That kind of helps.
Yeah.
See, we have a ticket. We have a ticket system, so I'd have to sign in as him to put my time in, because the customer will get the email and the tickets update, and they'll see it was him, not me. You know, it gets a little. If you have a ticket system.
So spoof his email address.
Like, go sit in the corner while I spoof your email address and take credit for
it. But I'm going to give you credit, so just relax.
Yeah, sit there and do nothing while I pay you, and I'm going to do the work and give you credit. He'll probably be like, what's a good day today?
I know, exactly. Sweet.
Yep. So, and my summary, most of you guys know, is I actually went the opposite way, where I had techs that worked for me. I had an office. And around 2008, I actually started downsizing to be just myself as the sole technician. And that, I mean, I've liked it. It's done pretty well for me. And because of, you know, remote access and managed service software, I'm able to do, you know, the work of the other two techs that I no longer have. So that has worked out. I do still have subcontractors, so I still have people that I can call when I do need to scale up. I've got a couple here directly in my city, and in the other cities where I have branch offices of my larger companies, I have partners in those cities where I can have boots on the ground if I need to have somebody go check on a server or set up a new workstation. So I've set up those partnerships all over the state so that I can do that. And that has worked well for me. Now, I am not alone completely. I do have somebody that is in the office, answering phones, entering the bills, helping with invoices, stuff like that. But I am the only technician. So the customer has no choice but to talk to me. And, maybe that's not always a good thing either.
Well, if they don't talk to you, they'll have to just go find a whole new support company.
And really, who doesn't want to talk to you?
Yeah, come on.
So, yeah, I talk pretty well.
So you have an office, or do you work out of your house?
Not anymore. I did have an office up until we bought the house. And so now I have my office here in my house. I still have a storage unit, which could be an office if I wanted it to. But I'm probably maybe a year or two away from going back to getting an office, because I'm, even though it's just me, I'm not really trying to grow the business, but at some point I will need to consider hiring somebody again full time, and I need a dedicated space. So I will probably go back out and get an office space, maybe a small little warehouse type deal where, we can put a bench in, store some inventory and stuff like that. But, 90% of what I do is remote. I just log in, take care of servers, throw out some Nynite updates and that sort of stuff. I do have a bench here where if I need to build a system like I did today, I just build it, ship it out. I get a tech that goes out on site, sets it up. So I don't really need a full-blown office right now, but I'll probably be there soon again.
Well, it's nice to work out of your house. The commute's not very far.
Well, that's the other problem. The commute's not very far, so the wife knows where you are.
Also, you send her out in the store. Go. She can go work out of the house.
Well, I could just send her to the mailbox. So the mailbox is a good 20 minutes away. All right. So, well, let's do what we used to do with Podnuts Pro. Like I was here when that happened, but
back in the day,
if you were a listener of Podnuts Pro, you were part of the Podnuts Pro team.
Yeah. But let's just go around and any, interesting stories or tips or questions that have come up from, your last few days of work.
All right. I got a couple of utilities that came up today. One, a client called me and said they couldn't access the remote desktop at one of their client's office. They connect by remote desktop to a client to run some software. Now, of course, they didn't call the company, they call me, but that's fine, to see if your internet's down or is your computer off, which would be a good first step, but they call me. Can't connect. So I do a ping the IP address. I get back a ping or something expired in transit, right? Expired in transit, not timed out, expired in transit. So what does that mean? It doesn't tell me much, but if you use a software called Ping Plotter, I use Ping Plotter 5. You put the IP in that, and it could, this software could do much more, can do historical data about pings and connectivity. But Ping Plotter 5 runs another utility, and it actually shows you what it's doing. In this case, it was trying to reach the last hop, but it was going back and forth between a couple of addresses. So it went back and forth like 10 times, and then it just gave up. So I could tell from that that the ISP had a routing issue. It could not route the packets directly to the end user's public IP. So that's when I said, call them over there. I think they're having an internet issue, and check it out. And sure enough, they called back to me and said, yeah, their ISP was having a problem. So now it's fixed. So Ping Plotter 5 gave me a little more information about what was going on, other than just the expired in transit from a normal ping. I was able to show them, you've got a routing problem. It doesn't know where to go.
So let me ask just a quick question for the Ping Plotter. So instead of, doing a trace route, which is what most providers, if you call them, they're going to tell the customer, oh, we'll see if you can, trace RT, to this site and get what give us what you got. Why do you use Ping Plotter?
Well, Ping Plotter will trace route is just going to time out. It won't show you what it's doing. The Ping Plotter got to a certain IP, and then it went back to the previous IP, previous hop, back to the other one. It just kept bouncing back and forth between the last two hops, and it couldn't go any further. And I could show that the packets are being bounced back and forth between the last a couple of different IPs and not able to get to their IP.
And are you using – so you're paying for Ping Plotter because they – right?
There's paid – well, we have a paid one, but a lot of the basic features are in the free one. Like what I did there wouldn't have needed a paid one.
Right.
The paid ones are more for longer historical data, if you want to have some history and reports. But the free one can do some pretty good utilities as well.
All right. So they're back up and running now?
They are back up and running. Not that I didn't really care. I mean, it wasn't my client. They couldn't reach one of their clients. But, it'd have been nice if they would have. Really, they could have easily picked up the phone and called the client and said, called their client. Hey, can you get online? No. Okay, thanks. And that would have been the end of it. But instead, they called me. I'm going to open a ticket. Now they're going to get billed. Of course, right? It's not a yes or no question.
Was it 15 minutes?
Well, it was more than a yes or no question. I had to figure out that the internet was down for them. So I directed them to the resolution, which is call your ISP.
Right. Right. There's an application that's native to Linux just called MTR. So you can just open up a command prompt and type MTR and then the domain. And it does along the same lines. It'll go through each of the hosts and then it goes down and it gives you the last, the average, the best, the worst. And then it just kind of recycles back through it. So you could actually watch latency over a long period of time. But if a site was down, you'd be able to see it go through. Like for me, it goes out to Beaverton, then to Beaverton, then to Seattle, and then through. It depends on where I'm going. But then I could see each of the hops all the way through, and then I would be able to see it stop in some place and maybe loop back on itself. But it's a command. It's a command line.
Yeah,
it's definitely not as pretty as Ping Plotter.
Ping Plotter's pretty. Pretty plotter.
Oh yeah, it's got nice graphs. And I switch between Ping Plotter and FreePing, which you can set up for continual pings, and it'll give you the historical data as well. But yeah, Ping Plotter's nice if you want to bill. Just take a screenshot, send it over. This is what I did. This is why you're being billed $150.
Yeah, because I see that complicated graph, and you're like, well, I don't understand that. It must be complicated. I'm just going to pay this bill.
That's it. there's a direct correlation between the more complicated and the more expensive a bill. Or the more complicated a picture is, the more expensive. Nasty Venn diagrams. Man, oh man, that's just cha-ching.
And one of the best parts about Pink Plotter is when you first open it up. So if you use Pink Plotter before, Marvin, you know what I'm talking about? What does it do when you first open it up? The little graphic shows loading superpowers.
Oh, yes, something like that. Yes. You're like, Wonder Twin powers activate.
So that's always fun. You're just happy when you open it. Oh, it's activating superpowers.
Yeah. Well, you just tell them there's a server spinning up just for this process for you. So
yep.
You know, that server costs money.
This is powerful stuff. Now, another tip I got is I think a lot of people have heard of VirusTotal, where you can upload a file and it analyzes it for you. It goes through all the different scanners of if it thinks it's bad or not. I found one, malwr.com. And this is a little different because you can actually upload a file. When you go to the site, it's kind of confusing. You got to go to, I'm pulling up right now, at the top, submit. So click on submit at the top. You can upload a file. Just like in VirusTotal, you upload a file. But what this does is it actually, and it takes a little while. It's not quick. It might take 3, 4, 5 minutes. They spin up a virtual machine and they open the file for you and show you screenshots of what the file is. So in my case, I had a client forward me what they thought was a virus. Thank you. So I can look at it. And I don't want to open it. I ran it through VirusTotal, came back clean. I uploaded it to this site, and it was actually a legitimate PDF from a vendor of theirs. So I could send the screenshots and say, this is what it is. And I didn't know it was a vendor. I just said, here's the screenshots of it. Do you know these people? Oh, yes, I know them. Okay, then it's safe. Go ahead and open it. So it's nice that you can actually see the file, not just an analysis of if it's bad or not.
Do you know what types of files will it submit? Will it submit zip? So a lot of times you maybe get a zipped file.
I've done PDF. Mostly what I've done is PDF. I don't know if I've done a zip file.
Okay, because the whole PDF that's actually an executable.
We could test open it. I could send a zip to it. I wonder if it'll do it.
And I always get a chuckle when people send you a virus. That's the digital equivalent of smelling milk and going, this smells bad, here you smell it. Or this tastes bad, here you taste it. Like, yeah, if you're telling me it tastes bad, why do you want me to taste it?
Yeah, well, that happens all the time. What I love is my spam filter will normally catch it. And then they call me and complain that I didn't respond to them. I was like, what do you mean you didn't respond? What happened? Well, I sent you an email and you never responded. And I said, well, you sent it to who? To me personally? To my work address? Yes. Okay. Well, first, don't do that. We have a support address to send to. Second, why did you forward me an email? Well, I think it's a virus. Well, then don't forward it to me. And they're like, oh, I didn't think about that. Yeah. And then I go check my spam filter and it's there. And then I do my analysis on it. And then I get back to them.
So what you should do is when they do that, you say, well, I would have replied back to you, but you sent me a virus and it crashed a whole network. So we're down right now. As soon as I have it back up and running from your virus. But
you're probably fine. Tell them. Yeah.
you're good. Don't worry about it. You infected me. We're down. I'll get back to you. And yes, this is billable.
To you. All my cleanup time, I'm a bill to you.
I used to answer, I didn't get it. That our virus protection must have blocked it. So,
okay, so we used two different services for spam filters, and they were on one of them. But I'm on a different one. And sometimes mine catches stuff that theirs doesn't. And sometimes theirs catches stuff mine doesn't because we're on just two different spam filtering services. So, yeah, sometimes they get it and forward to me and mine catches it. So it's almost the equivalent of when they email me that their email's down. Which, do y'all get that a lot?
Not as much. But
really? I get that all the time.
I must have smart clients. No, I'm just kidding.
I guess maybe you've trained them better, but I always get emails that the email is down. I don't, of course, know about it. I know about it because they call in and then report it. And then when I get the email back up, I get an email, the email's down. Right. And then I know it. Then I have a little chuckle because I know what they did.
Right.
Or they email the internet is down or, you know, whatever. I like when that happens. And then inevitably I call them back and say, hey, I just got to email your emails down. Your email's working around that right now, right? Oh, yeah. I sent that when it was down. I said, okay. You know you should just call if your internet email's down, right? Because we don't know. It probably won't go through if your email's down. And they go, oh, yeah, right. And then next time they do it again.
Yeah. Well, I can tell you that probably one of the downfalls of having a managed service is if you've got it set to alert you anytime they go down, you know, if you're watching their server or their internet connection, that, you know, I made the mistake a couple of times of calling to say, hey, are you down? Oh, how did you know? Oh, well, that's what you pay me for. But then, you know, if I'm busy, you know, if I'm at a client or something, then I'll start getting, you know, people calling from their cell phones. Oh, we've been down for 10 minutes. You didn't call us. It's like, wow. Sorry, I was taking care of another emergency. I'm sorry. I'll get right on it.
Yeah, that's when it's important to have the response times clear to your clients. You're not going to get back to them within 5 minutes every time something happens.
Right. So, Matt Rainey, I don't know if you finished with your analysis, but I went ahead and also uploaded a zip file to the MalRW site. And I actually uploaded a agent file from my managed services, and I've got a full overview, so it looked like it opened up the zip file and examined each of the files inside that zip.
So what are the screenshots that you got? They just shows you the contents of the zip file?
Yeah, the screenshots are a Microsoft desktop.
Right. It's probably Windows 95 desktop.
Yes.
Or 98, Windows 98.
Yeah. And it shows the setup language. And that it's trying to install.
Okay. So I tried to run the executable as well inside the zip.
Yep.
Nice. So you might have, I wonder if your agent's going to show up on your dashboard.
That's right. I've got MalR desktop. I now got to charge them $30 a month.
Well, you installed my agent. You must want my service.
That's right. Exactly.
Well, I get a lot of in my Gmail. A lot of Spanish like attachments, and so I will. Next time I get one, I'll throw it up there and see what it is.
Yeah, it's pretty nice. Just to see what it is, because sometimes VirusTotal will come back clean, but sometimes it could be bad. Still, it's nice to. And a PDF is pretty easy to upload and see what the screenshot is. So anyway, little tip. I like that site just for the visual.
All right.
No, it's really good.
All right. Albando, what's been happening in your world for the last few days?
It's actually been nice. You know, I got a call today, and this is just one of those calls where, you know, nothing, it wasn't too exciting. I was done faster than they expected. I got a call saying printer spooler's not working. Okay. So I get a hold of the person. I say, now, you can't print to the printer. Can the other person in the same office print? No. Okay. It's got to be not just a print spooler. It's not just a local issue. This is a printer issue because they rearranged everything. So I get on site, and as soon as I walk in the door, I look down, and the cable had been ripped out of the VoIP phone, and the attachment... The VoIP foam is mounted on the wall now, but whenever they moved it, they either stepped on it, ripped it out, I don't know, but the Cat 5 was ripped out of the VoIP foam, and on the attachment, the end of the Cat 5 cable was still the attachment inside, like, the guts of the phone, which was laying on the ground. And that phone didn't have a dial tone, these two people couldn't print. And I walked in and I was like, well, there's a cable on the ground with like guts on it. And they said, oh, okay. So I grabbed it and I was like, well, that's broken. So I plugged it into the switch, which now, because this was the line in, right, from the wall, plugged in the switch, printer printed, phone's online, everything's good. And I left and the lady called me and she said, so did you already leave? And I said, yeah. I said, it was like ripped out of the back of the phone and the gut part is pretty much up. I didn't call the guts, but it's up on top of the desk. And they were like, oh, okay. Well, we're not sure how that happened. I'm like, I don't either, but somebody ripped it out.
No one's going to own up to that.
No, but it was funny that nobody noticed the cable laying there in the middle of the ground without attached to nothing.
Yeah. So. You know what happened? You know what they say? I'm not a computer person.
Exactly. I don't know computers very well, but this is on fire and I'm not sure if it's a virus or not.
I'm not sure that's what it's supposed to do.
Right. I'm not a computer person. There was that. You know, make sure you order the correct part. If you listen to the last Geeksters, I talked about a Dell server that went down. It was a motherboard. The difference between a T110 and a T112, you need to make sure you order the right motherboard. They sent me a T110. They were down for another 2 days while I overnighted a T112, and they were back up and running. But, you know.
Yeah, I heard about that. That's those motherboards.
They look exactly the same, different chips. I mean, you can hold them right next to each other, and the chips and everything except the processor socket. That's what I meant to say. The socket's different.
Such a small detail.
I mean, I tried to cram it in there. I thought, I'll probably stop pushing. I probably should stop pushing, and but once I got it, it was nice that it booted and everything went right back to place. But just kind of a note to always. We get in such a hurry that, you know, especially when a site's down, we want to make sure that things are done. We want to make sure things are done efficiently. We want to make things are done fast. And this was just a simple oversight that meant the company, they were good. They were fine with being down for 2 days. Three and four, they were starting to get a little frustrated. And rightfully so. I got them back up and running. So they went down Monday morning, and Thursday by 11 o'clock, they were back up and running. 11 o'clock a.m., they were back up and running. So, you know, they were just about at the end of their were okay to be down still. This was a data server, but it was also their QuickBooks server. It was also their Act server. It had nothing to do with their domain controller. They were up. They were running. They could print. Everything was fine. So they just didn't have access to a lot of data that they needed to have access to.
So this was a real server.
Real server.
Not under warranty.
No.
What kind of server? Was it a Dell?
Yeah, it was a Dell.
So this is a good time to tell them. I like to keep servers under maintenance, under warranty. Yeah. It's a good time to talk about with them. When that happens, it's a good time to say, look, client, this is why we keep production servers under warranty. Unless, of course, they're fine being down for 2-3 days. I guess it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
I'm surprised they were fine with 2 days. I've had customers that, you know, if they lose connection for 10 minutes, they're freaking. So that's pretty good.
Well, I've offered this customer plans of backups, and it's too expensive. And this customer, I think, is they see the light at the end of the tunnel. The gentleman's probably going to retire soon, so he's just making it happen just to get by. And so when I start coming in and saying, hey, you know, we could back all this stuff up, we need to do, I mean, they do have some backups, but it's, you know, not a box backup. So there's no, if the server were to like catch on fire, we're like, well, okay, we offered this, I talked to you about this, and you said no.
So basically, his retirement's a failed hard drive away.
Pretty much. Yeah, exactly. You do it.
If that fails, if he's gone, he's like, I'm done. I'm out of here. There's exactly. No point.
And this was a customer who I raised my rates and they were like, nope, there's no way. That is insane. You can't raise your rates. And I said, then I'm leaving. And they said, well, okay, then we'll have you. And I'm like, man, you called my, because I was going to walk. I went in there one day with a meeting and saying, this is, you know, you're calling me a lot. You're not on a service plan. You are a customer that I need to raise my rates for. And then he said, oh, okay. I was like, darn it. I was hoping to walk away. one of those customers.
Don't tell them you're raising your rates. Just do the work the first time and bill the rate, and then let them say something.
I guess I
can. Yeah, they might not even notice.
they'll notice. This is a great customer. They've been with me for a long time. But it's kind of we have an interesting dynamic. I'll quote them something. They'll say, you know, you can get this cheaper here. Well, I know you can get it cheaper there. That's why. But I'm doing the research to find these parts for you. Well, what if we do this? I'm like, that's not going to work. What if we just go to Fry's and just get a new server? I'm like, well, okay. Then what? Well, then can't we just move everything over? No, because of the RAID card, the RAID chip.
Yeah, those clients kind of, I don't like when clients do their own research and try and come up with a solution on them on their own and want me to implement it.
Yeah.
That's not how it works. You don't go to the doctor and say, I think I need my appendix removed. Well, and he's going to say, oh, what doctor? Okay, hop on a table. We'll take it out right now.
My wife hates WebMD. And if you don't know, my wife's a physician assistant. So people will come to her and go, I think I have this, because, and they bring their WebMD printout. And my wife's like, ugh.
Yeah, I have a lot of doctors for clients, and I ask them about that, and they all hate that. Everyone's a doctor all of a sudden.
Well, and apparently at the beginning, my wife works for Kaiser. Apparently now a couple years ago, they implemented this take a picture, send it to your doctor thing. Well, you can see the kind of pictures. I was like, seriously? I need you to come in to show me that abscess. You can't just take a photo of that abscess there and send it to me by a picture.
Well, you could get in trouble. I'm not.
Well, hey, you're talking to your medical provider.
Wow. I'm not sexting. This is medical.
This is totally medical. I want to find out if that's gonorrhea or not.
A picture. Is this normal?
That's right. My wife's like, come in. Yeah. I bet you this was not how we wanted the first show to go, right? We've kind of gone way.
Yeah. Well.
Down this.
Okay. So here's a story. I had a client today. I'm talking to a client, and I'm sure none of you know this, but we had a lot of floods down here last month, and my office flooded. We had 3 feet of water in it, 3.5 feet of water in it. The whole building had to be gutted and redone. We lost everything pretty much, all the furniture, all the computers. Our servers were fine. They were in a rack. They were higher up. But pretty much we lost everything. So, and we're still in temporary offices right now. Talking to a client, and most conversations, even now, even though it's been a month ago, talk about, hey, how are you during the flood? How's your building? How's your home? So I'm talking to her, and she's asking about our building. And she said, yeah, you know, and this client has been planning a move to a new building for years. And she says, well, I think we're getting close. I think we just finalized the architectural plans for the new building. It should be happening soon. And I say, great. Am I going to have a server room? She pulls out the plans. No place for servers. They have 4 servers. So I need, we have a rack. You know, we need some equipment in there. No place for a server. No, none. She's like, I cannot believe this. We have been through so many rewrites of this plan, and I've completely forgot about the server room. And I don't understand how, this is not the first time I've dealt with people building the building or redoing a building, and they have no place for a server room. Do these architects not realize that these big companies that have 100 or more employees are going to have a server or two, and we need some place to put that?
Do you think it's out of sight, out of mind? Sorry, Marvin.
Well, I was going to say, they do think about a phone room, right?
She said there was nothing, not an electrical closet, not a phone room. She couldn't find anything on the plans.
Well, that's negligence on the designer part. I mean, they've got to at least account for electrical and low voltage and all of that stuff.
Yep. I told her, if you're confused, send me the plans. I'll take a look at them. But get with the architect. We need some place with a sufficient power preferably, you know, I need some kind of, I say, you know how big the rack is. It's sitting in the middle of your office. Go look at the rack. I need to be able to walk around that. We need place for the switches, the routers to mount those in the wall, or actually in her rack, they're in the rack. And we need preferably some thermostat for its own AC in there. Nothing. And I can tell you, since the last show, 2-3 years ago, I've probably had at least 4 or 5 customers that have built new buildings and did not have place for a server. One place I went into, and they didn't even tell us till afterwards that they were even building a building. They called us to have them to move them. I said, move you where? Or our new building. New building. What? When did this happen? I go look at it. I said, I need to go look at it first. We need to test the cabling. I said, hopefully you ran enough cabling to the right places. The server closet was like a bedroom closet, like 1x4, like 1 foot deep and 4 foot wide. And I showed them the server. I said, how do you want to fit these servers in there? They're like, that's not going to fit in there. That's my point. It's a nice building. You got a really nice building. Where do you want to shove the server now?
Men's bathroom.
I've seen that before.
Yeah. It is amazing how many companies will do that. And you haven't even asked about, you know, how they're getting their internet and phone service transferred, because I've had customers that, you know, will call me and say, hey, we're moving next week, but they've got fiber internet. And I'm like, well, did you tell your provider? And they're like, well, no. I said, well, you need 90 to 120 days. They can't just roll up a truck next week and give you internet.
It's like a toaster. You just can't plug one in over there. Yeah, just plug a fiber in over there.
Just run down to Home Depot. They got fiber there, right?
When I was with the flood, we had one client move their servers to a different state, and we were checking our dashboard and just to see who was up, who was down, and this one client had all their servers offline. I said, well, I'll give it another day. Maybe they just had some water in the building. I gave it a few days. They didn't call us. So I'm thinking, well, they must know it's down because no one called. We gave it a few days. Still not up. So I called them. Well, you know your servers are down. Oh, yeah, we're moving them to another state. I said, really? Another state? Okay. You have internet lined up? Oh, yeah. I said, so when were you going to let us know? Oh, we were just going to plug it in. I said, well, you have servers with remote users and terminal server with a static IP and VPNs. You really can't just plug it in. So you need to call me when you have it someplace. I got to walk you through reconfiguring the router when the internet guy comes out. So we go through all this. We get it back online. And the best circuit they could get was a 3 meg down, 0.5 up. And the first thing they said was, boy, the remote users are complaining that it's so slow. And I said, yeah, I would be too. That's pretty bad.
And what did they have before?
A fiber connection. They probably had 50 up and down. And they said, what are we going to do about it? I said, well, why are you asking me now? I mean, you didn't ask me when you're moving the servers. How about we do this? How about you bring them back where they were? Because that's where they should be. And so in reality, we had to have a meeting to discuss what they're going to do, because it's complicated to move this. Most of the users are here. They've only got a few users where they moved it to. They've got bad internet. We really need to discuss what they're going to do. And we haven't decided. It's still in the place with the slow internet and the very poor performance for the users. But none of them even discussed with us about moving servers to a different state. They just wanted us to fix it. I said, I can't fix it. I mean, get a different internet provider. And they said, well, that's the only provider that can service this area. Okay. Well, we probably are going to have them move back to over here then. So speaking of internet, I'm getting gigabit internet tomorrow. Oh. Up and down. Supposedly. That's the marketing material, so I believe it.
And are they doing for you at no extra charge?
Installation fee has been waived.
Oh.
They said, we're a fan of Podnuts Pro. We're going to give this to you.
But it is supposed, it is advertised, and they said my address will be gigabit up and down. I'll report about that next week.
If there's a show. Yeah, Matt's down. Gig meant zero. Get a whole lot of zeros in front of that
one. Getting zero up and down. Well, I'm going to keep my other internet. I have probably for a month, I'll keep both of them just to make sure. I have 30 days to cancel with no contract, which should be enough time for me to test my gigabit up and down.
So how did this come about? Was this your current provider that said that they're going to upgrade, or is this another provider?
Switching providers. In? Switching providers. Yep. Going, it's a, I hate to say it because I would be the first one to tell people to avoid this, AT&T, U-verse fiber. I'm not a fan of anything AT&T, but I can't pass up the gigabit up and down, especially with 30 days free or 30 days to cancel, not 30 days free. And it's cheaper than what I'm paying now. Right now, I get about 150 down, maybe 40 up. And for cheaper, I'm going to get gigabit up and down. Your speeds may vary.
Yeah.
All right. So I've just made a note here that we are going to ask you about your gigabit internet speed. Now, how are you going to really put that to the test? I mean,
I'm going to go from their gateway directly to a computer and run test speeds. But that's my test. But I have, when I built this house, I ran cables to every room. So I have gigabit cabling in every room.
Yeah, but do you have some movies that you're going to, download? You have some games you want to, you're going to set up a gaming farm, gaming server, and, see how many guys you can get on it, and...
No, I don't game. The problem now is with sometimes when I'm streaming, not me, I don't stream. When my daughter stream, it might pixelate. So she could tell me right away if I, I can put every TV download and streaming something and see what happens. I got 6 or 7 TVs. I'll put them all streaming something.
Smart TVs or Roku devices?
Smart TVs. I'd like to get a Roku, but
they're coming out with some new Rokus.
They got a whole new line of Rokus. I'm looking forward to it. I have two right now at my house.
And I don't have any. I have an old Apple TV.
I have an Xbox and a Raspberry Pi.
Are you doing live TV on your Xbox?
No. That goes through the smart TV. But then any over the air stuff we have an antenna for.
So I had another crypto locker infection today on a client. Those are always fun.
Yay.
And they didn't even notice one of their software packages wasn't working. And so they called us because and the thing is this software package has a lot of issues. So when they call that it doesn't work, it's nothing out of the ordinary. It doesn't work frequently. But one of my techs was looking at it and he came and got me and says, I don't know why this software is not working. It should work. I agree. It should work. But anyway, I look at it and I said, well, they're encrypted. Oh, I missed that. So they only noticed because one software package was not working. And the funny part is, this client does the shotgun approach to support, meaning if something's not working, they call everyone. Now, we're their IT company. We're not their ISP. We don't support, we're not the vendors for their software. They call everyone. They called the internet people and say, y'all need to bring a truck out here. I can't get online, which they could. They could. So they got the ISP rolling a truck. They've got us. They've called their vendor support for different softwares, all of them. I'm like, okay, you can call off the dogs because we know what the problem is. we're going to restore this data. But they just called everyone. I said, did they get their plumber come in and maybe their yard guy too? I mean, we really need all hands on deck for this.
Microsoft sending out a drone.
But they just called everybody. I wonder what Cox is going to do when they get out there. It's Cox Internet. I wonder what they were going to do.
Say, it works for on our end. Here's a bill. That was more than a yes or no question.
So we had to tell them, yeah. You don't need to call everybody. We'll let you know if we need to call somebody else, but we got it. But the thing is, this particular client, we are the point of contact for everything. So if they have any issue, we contact the software vendor, we contact the ISP. Some clients, we have them contact the ISP, but this one, we contact everyone. So I don't know why they even called other people.
So do you have some sort of punishment when a client does that? If they, you know, call somebody else instead of you and you still have to show up and fix stuff?
Punishment. I like that term. You're punished now. We are going to increase response time to 6 hours.
I have punishment clauses, and I used to have a client that would literally call, and if we didn't pick up, they would hang up and call again.
Oh, we have clients all the time do that.
If we didn't pick up, they would hang up and call again. So I tell them now that, yeah, I saw that you were calling. I was on the other line, and every time you call, I add 5 minutes to the amount of time that it takes for me to call you back.
Okay, so they're in like a timeout zone.
Yes, yes.
A penalty box.
Yeah.
You just take one tech away. I'm sorry, that tech is now busy. You're down to one tech, and he's really. It's
I don't necessarily have that kind of thing. This is a service agreement customer, and it was a mission critical thing. But we don't have a lot of clients calling other people to fix stuff. Now, if a client did call someone else to fix it, and that person came out and did something and couldn't fix it, and now we've got to go behind them. Yeah, that's a higher rate to go out there and clean up after somebody else. But we had a client once call. He called during lunch, and our receptionist, we don't answer the phone during lunch because the receptionist answers the phone, and she goes to lunch from 12 to 1. So if you call the office between 12 and 1, it's going to go to voicemail. We had a client call. And the voicemail, I wish I could play it for you. The voicemail said, this is so-and-so. I need I want to cancel my service with y'all. I just want to cancel my service. And he hung up. So I called him back and I said, okay, so you want to cancel the service? Let me give you your admin password because your new tech will need that. Well, I don't want to cancel my service. Oh, I'm sorry. That's what the voicemail said. Which says, I just don't like – when I call, I want to talk to somebody. I don't like these answer machines. Okay. I had to explain to him, well, our receptionist goes to lunch, and he didn't like it. He says, well, if I get voicemail again, I won't be happy. And I said, well, I'll tell you what then. Do not call between 12 and 1 because you absolutely will get voicemail. Don't call before 8 a.m. Call between 8 and noon and 1 and 5, and your chances of getting a voicemail will be dramatically reduced. But yet, when I call him a lot of times, I get voicemail. And I so bad wanted to leave a voicemail saying, I need to drop you as a client. That's right. If I can't call and talk to you, I don't want to work with you.
Oh, man.
But unfortunately, doing work for businesses, and I'm sure for home users, we really get all kinds of personalities that we have to deal with.
Yeah, barking dogs.
Yep.
That's what they are like sometimes.
Yeah. So, Matt, I want to go back and ask a question. Earlier, we were talking about, you know, warranties on servers. And I actually have a customer now that finally has agreed to allow me to purchase for them post-warranty contracts for their HP servers. And let me tell you how they came to that conclusion that that was probably a good thing to do. They had a power supply go on one of their servers. And it was a branch office that, you know, had one of the lower end HPs where it was just a single power supply, no redundant. And the power supply went. And it went on a Friday, just before lunch. And they're like, well, how quickly can you get out and fix it? And I'm like, well, I can't. And here's the reason. I'm in Fort Lauderdale. They're in Tampa. So no matter how fast I drive, I'm not getting there quickly. But because they were out of warranty and we call HP, well, HP, yeah, they can, you know, they'll take care of it. But it's obviously going to be, you know, next business day and whatever, whatever. Well, they couldn't wait. They wanted it, and they wanted it on as quickly as possible. So the best we could do for them was to have a tech from HP get it and go to their office on Saturday so they could be up and running on Monday, because the only other option is they would have, the tech would have showed up on Monday before noon, and they could have been down all day. So they wanted it up and running before Monday. So I got them the HP tech. They sent the power supply. Saturday delivery, got there, was done. So their bill from HP, $3,400.
Now, did they have that price before they did it?
No.
Wow, they didn't even ask what it was going to cost?
No, they were like, I don't care, just get it done. And I'm like, do you realize it's going to cost you a lot? I don't care. So the server is more than 5 years old. When I get new HP servers, I put on the longest warranty I can get, which is 5 years, 24 hours a day, 4 hour response. That would have cost them $530.
But yet, so you tried to get them to get the server, or was out of warranty already?
Well, yeah, because the standard warranty was the 3 years, you know, next business day. But it was. You know, almost at the end of year four.
But you can still add it, right? Because HP lets you add warranties on it.
Well, now you can, but it's an annual cost of $730. So it's still better than $3,000 if you need to have that done again.
Now, is it that much just because it's an older server?
No, I think a lot of it had to do with the fact that it was a Saturday.
No, but with the yearly one going forward, 700.
No, I think what happens with HP is once it goes out of warranty, their post warranty are always going to be higher, because you can't. The server's and it's going into year five now, so it's probably because of the age, the warranty is a little bit higher.
I think that might be it.
But you can only get it 1 year at a time. And I'm assuming that that's because they want you to think about it each year that you need a new server.
And really, you should. I mean, we tell clients that the lifespan of a server is 3 to 5 years. And that's – I don't like servers with single power supplies. Those power supplies go out fairly often. And that is one – it's an easy fix, but it's you can't do anything about it. You can't go buy one locally. You got to get that from the manufacturer because it's only going to fit that server.
Yeah. I mean, I usually have a spare. I order a spare. I make them order a spare when we do that. But, you know, I was going to ask you, is what do you do? How do you always get your customers to agree to that? Because I just, you know, for some of my customers, whether it's a smaller site, you know, even if I went with the cheapest server that would allow for redundancy, you know, it's not a $2,000 to $3,000 server that they're going to get quotes from every other tech who wants their business. And
our clients aren't pricing their stuff around. They're going to get what we recommend. But as far as the warranty goes, if we see the warranty is going to expire, I just send them a quote and say, here, we're going to renew this. And unless they reply back saying, no, don't do that, we just usually do it and invoice them.
Well, Bando, what do you do?
Yeah, that's something that I probably need to start implementing a little bit more. But it's usually just, you know, hey, we need to look at invoicing or look at, you know, I'm not as aggressive, I guess, as Matt. You know, we're looking at, you know, what's the warranty, and then, you know, hey, this is coming up, we should do this. And a lot of times they're like, no, not really. I just probably need to say, no, this isn't, you know, this, by the way, we're renewing the server, and here it is. This one fell through the cracks in this last job. But they also didn't, I mean, they weren't interested in any kind of upgrades. So
we tell a lot of clients that some things are going to be yearly, right? Yearly, you're going to have most clients, you're going to have your SSL cert for your server. That's every year. You're going to have your live security and your security suite for your router, for we use WatchGuard. You're going to have that. I mean, there's just certain things. If you're warranted out server, we're going to renew your warranty service. There's just some things that are we tell them are going to be yearly. That's just how it is. It's just life.
I've started doing that where I don't even phrase it in the form of a question. When I send them, you know, an estimate, I just send them, this is coming up due, this is how much it is. I'll send you the invoice when we're done.
Yeah. So that's basically what we do most of the time too. We say, look, here's what we're going to renew this expires. Yeah. We're going to, you know, if you have any questions, let me know. But otherwise here's the, what we're going to do.
Actually, I just did that on Monday. I had a antivirus, 120 stations that was, I don't know why we didn't do it earlier. Oh, I know why we didn't do it earlier, but that's another story. But I had to send them an email saying, oh, your antivirus is about to renew. And all I do is send them, here's for 1 year, here's for 2 years, here's for 3 years. Last time you purchased, this is what you did. What do you want to do this year? And usually they will say, well, we'll just do what we did last time. And then that's it.
Yeah.
All right. So, guys, I think we have put together a jam-packed show. And all we need now is a stack of emails.
Yeah, that's right. We do need a stack of emails. I know for me, you can email me at matt@podnuts.com if you have. I think we're going to be working on a Podnuts Pro email address. Right now, just send either individually. Mine is matt@podnuts.com.
martin@podnuts.com.
And marvin@podnuts.com.
The 3M show.
Triple threat. No, never mind.
We didn't invent podcasts. We just make it better. Is that how it goes?
All right. I like that.
Yep, that sounds good. All right. And so our objective is to try to put out a show as often as we can. We're not going to commit to a schedule, but we'd like to say, you know, weekly or regularly as possible. So be looking forward to the next one, gentlemen. And those of you out there listening, we appreciate you downloading and listening to the podcast. Anything you guys want to say before we end off?
Thanks for listening. Hopefully it won't be another 3 years for another show. Hopefully it'll be just 1 week.
Yes, I concur.
And I guess we'll say, I guess the format, just real quick, is going to be stories from the trenches, things that we come across. And sometimes you might pick one topic and talk about it from each point of view. And sometimes we might take suggestions from email of what to talk about. It's kind of open, I guess, of what we're going to do every week, right?
Yep.
Yep.
All right.
So, everyone, thank you very much. And gentlemen, we shall all bid everyone a good night.
Music provided by Steve Cherubino at stevecherubino.com.